Put industry leading, difference making, and tomorrow shaping on your to-do list. Explore Deloitte Technology Careers at deloitte.com/tech careers and engineer your future at Deloitte.
Yeah, I was a heavy drinker, but I didn't recognize what the people closest to me recognized. I ended up laying flatlined on a hospital operating table. Somehow the surgeons brought me back to life.
When your life depends on it, there's only one place you can turn. Karen. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.
Hello, hello, hello again. Welcome back to Thursday, November 12th, I think is the date. Cannabis Hour. I'm here with the one and only Javier Haas. How are you today, my friend?
Doing great. What about you, Elliot Lane?
I'm very well. I'm very well. If you hadn't noticed, I upgraded to my own personal Blue Yeti microphone. So hopefully you're not hearing my wire hit against my shirt the entire time today. Ooh. So we're going to be a little clearer today. I have a special announcement, but first of all, thank you to all of our pre-market prep listeners who stick around for us as always. We hope you get a lot of education out of these shows. Really great lineup today. But I have a really important announcement for everybody listening. First of all, this week was Javier Haas's birthday. Incredibly important week. For everybody involved in the cannabis industry, happy birthday, Javier. I know I'm the only one on here right now, so we can't get a large happy birthday song on, but I think everybody's singing it to you in their hearts. So
appreciate it.
Feel the love, my friend. Feel it.
I'm ready for another year of cannabis work, advocacy, just anything we can do.
Amen. We could not do Benzinga Cannabis without Javier Haas. You are a backbone of this industry, sir. And honestly, you know all three of our guests very well. You know, you are associated with a lot of people we talk to on the show because you provide them the visibility that helps legitimize this industry. So, you know, with that, you know, I give credit where it's due, you know, and you deserve quite a bit of it for us. So, Javi, do you want to talk a little bit about what we're going to see today?
Yeah, so this is a special show, right? I started programming the Benzinga Cannabis Hour, and one of my main missions is for the show to be representative of diversity in the industry. And you know, with that in mind, we had scheduled a show on women in executive positions in the cannabis industry, which we know are the percentage of women in executive positions in the cannabis industry is higher than other industries, but still low and still nowhere near 51%, which is what they represent of the population. So we need to do better at finding representation. We had put together one of several shows on women in cannabis today. Unfortunately, our last guest today had to drop out last minute. And what's interesting, it was a kind of a serendipitous event because we had to reschedule the last guest. And today, Argentina, my home country, this is where I am right now, passed its regulations for medical cannabis. More than 3 years after passing a medical cannabis law, today they actually came out with regulations saying where you can get it, how you can, you know, do to access it. And it basically allows for home cultivation, what's called solidarity cultivation and sale in pharmacies. So our last guest today will be touching on that subject. And before that, we have two amazing guests, Irina Hosu, who is the CFO for Flora Corp, and Jill Ellsworth, who is the CEO and co-founder of Willow Industries.
So, two companies I think we would all agree are on the rise. They're both doing incredible things. Aaron, let's go ahead and move Irina over and hop right into it. But, you know, Flower is a company that has been associated with us, I would say, for longer than Benzinga has been around, because the founder and CEO of Flower is, we'll say, besties with the CEO and founder of Benzinga, Jason Raznick. Oh, they went to Michigan together. I don't know if Irina, you can if you can correct me or confirm that, but I'm pretty sure they went to college together and have known each other for quite a while. So
I actually think it was high school. So I think they even go back further than that. Yeah.
Oh, I hope Vinay picked on Jason. Don't tell Jason I said that.
I have no doubt that he did.
Oh, Vinay, I'm on your side, man. Awesome. Irina, welcome. How are you today?
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. We're glad to have you. You know, let's jump right in. We'd love to hear about you, your journey into cannabis, and if you wouldn't mind leaning that into a bit about Flower.
Sure, absolutely. So my journey into cannabis is, I think, relatively new. My first day at Flower was the first day of COVID lockdown. So I am yet to be a Flower employee. It's been a ride, let me tell you, over the past 6 months. But I've yet to be an employee, actually, when we've been in the office. My journey so far has been entirely virtual, and it's been incredibly exciting. I don't have, prior to joining Flower, I don't have history within the cannabis space, but my experience is very broad. So prior to Flower, I worked for a $2 billion US-based fintech, where I managed sort of their global operations. Prior to that, I led Canada for a beauty brand, a very well-known beauty brand in the CPG world. And I've spent quite a bit of time in, you know, regulated beverage and alcohol industry in Canada as well. And then I started my career in tech. So it's certainly been diverse, to say the least.
Yeah.
I've loved my time in cannabis. And really, I think the reason for me joining cannabis was probably pretty similarly to a lot of us, which is, there may be other opportunities to join a growing business, but when else can you possibly say in your career that you have the opportunity to join an industry and a global industry at that? So it's been beyond thrilling and incredibly exciting, and I'm thrilled to be here.
Goes back to what we were talking about a little bit last week, Irina. You, of course, wouldn't be privy to this, but bringing in veterans of different industries helps cannabis, you know, helps put that much more of a pillar under the industry. So I honestly, you're the first fintech veteran I've met in cannabis. I'm sure there are more, but, you know, I don't hear that a lot. And, you know, Benzinga plays a lot in the fintech, obviously, the capital market space. So that's really cool to hear. What fintech, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was a US-based fintech by the name of WEX, Inc. W-E-X.
Oh, yeah. We know WEX. We know WEX very well. Awesome. So Flower.
Sorry, let me ask you a quick question here, and I'm going to put you on the spot for a little second. But, you know, you say fintech, cannabis, it's like where Benzinga's biggest verticals intersect. If I prompted you, you know, what's interesting in the combination of cannabis and fintech? Have you seen any very interesting initiative products or lack thereof?
Yeah. Let me start, I think, first on the cannabis side. I think cannabis, particularly in Canada, is very difficult, very different, let's say, than Canada in, cannabis in the US, in the sense that we're working in a highly regulated type market. I would say there's probably a bit of intersection there as it comes to fintech because of how regulated it is, particularly globally, and you know, each jurisdiction that you play in has their own regulations. So I would say there's definitely some similarities there. I would also say they're actually quite different. The way I think about cannabis, and I'm sure I'm not original in my thinking here, but it's very much a CPG type industry, or it's a CPG to be type industry. We're not quite there yet for a variety of different reasons. And part of it is because we are such a new industry. I think sort of if we think about fintech and cannabis, another similarity, quite frankly, is that both industries, I think, are grown by entrepreneurial type spirit. every cannabis LP thinks they're going to be the biggest and best cannabis LP. And frankly, that's not necessarily dissimilar to many fintech industries.
So true. So true. Absolutely. So if kind of bouncing off that, you know, every LP, obviously you start, you know, in Canada, or the MSOs start in the US, but you all have several markets that you all play in, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the many differentiating factors of Flower, I think, is our global presence. So we are highly leveraged on in Canada in the rec market, very much so on the premium play. And I'd love to get into that if you have some time. But we're very focused on premium in Canada. Globally, we have what we think to be the biggest outdoor cultivation license, which is in Portugal. And we have sort of two licenses, one indoor, one outdoor. And then we also have a GMP facility in Australia as well. So we really do feel like we've hit, at least for now, the biggest legal, for lack of a better word, global markets. Certainly very interested to see what's going to happen down south of the border with you fine folks, particularly given the past week. So, you know, that we continue to be hyper-focused on that as well.
Well, we're interested to see what happens here.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, and maybe you'll happen to Argentina next with Javier. We're going to talk about that market a little bit later. Javi, you can feel free to cut me off anytime, yeah. Man. But I just want to touch on really quick before we hop into Canada, Portugal. I seem to see several companies hopping in that market right now. Could you talk a little bit about why?
Sure. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think, you know, first of all, the climate is exactly what you would hope the climate to be, particularly on an outdoor grow. It's relatively inexpensive to grow in Portugal versus perhaps other EU type countries. And there's a really clear pathway, I think, into Germany, which is where, quite frankly, a lot of the growth is going to be coming from, at least we believe, within the European space.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. No, to date, I think Germany commands something like 80% of the total market in Europe. Also, you know, Portugal generally is a great place to be, right? So it's never bad to have an excuse to go visit, you know, Lisbon and Porto and you know, go to some beaches or whatever.
Right.
So but what's the plan? What's the intent, you know, other than exporting to Germany? Are you looking at to export to other markets, and are you exporting already? What's the situation there?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we actually just finished what we believe to be the largest outdoor grow. About 42,000 plants is what we had in the ground. We're just in the process right now of harvesting them and drying them and really trying to determine that market. You know, no surprise, Germany absolutely is of interest to us. We're looking at other potential markets as well. You know, I think Israel today perhaps announced a full rec market opening up. I don't have details on it, but I think that might be something that could potentially be interesting. And then certainly potentially exporting some of the product turning some of the product into oils and sending it over to Australia as well. You know,
Fantastic.
What's fascinating about Flower is that we are one of only of a handful of organizations within Europe that have GMP certification. Which is an incredibly long process, and it's an incredibly rigorous process, particularly with COVID and with things sort of shutting down in March, April. There haven't been many other GMP certifications given out, so we really do believe that we have quite a strong competitive advantage there.
Great. Mm-hmm. Now, hopping into the premium, you know, we'll go ahead and jump there, right? So, you know, you can correct me if I'm misunderstanding, you know, what you mean here, but high quality, the value, that premium side of things seems to be a subjective term. So maybe a little bit about what you all mean when
Sure.
you say that.
Yeah, it's a great, great question. What we mean when we say or maybe I'll answer that a little bit differently. What the market deems to be premium is not necessarily what we deem to be premium, but nonetheless, the market dictates it. And typically the market would dictate high potency THC type strains. Flower's perspective is that it goes much deeper than just the THC. The terpenes matter, quite frankly, when we talk about premium. And what's great about Flower is that we have an indoor grown facility versus perhaps some of the other LPs that we have within the space, that, you know, 80% of the product that we have coming down right now is grown outdoor. So if we think about it sort of from the illicit market, it's almost like comparing, you know, quad or triple A product to a double A product. It's just very, very different. You know, one of the great things about flower is that we were able to grow indoor and it's very, very consistent. So we have what we believe to be phenomenal cultivation knowledge internally. We have incredibly good genetics and we have quite a bit of internal IP. I think that really differentiates us and to be able to claim that we're premium versus perhaps other LPs within the space.
Yeah. Now, you know, I find interesting what you say about terpenes beyond THC, right? Because it's one of those things that I try to tell people all the time, like a lot of THC does not mean that the cannabis itself is good. When you go buy a bottle of wine, you assume it has 14% alcohol, generally, more or less. You want something else. You want the flavor, you want the you know, in the case of cannabis, like, you know, if it's properly cured, whatever. Now, you know, how big is the premium market? Like, we are seeing most of the larger companies pivot toward value brands. So why premium? Like, why stay premium? And like, is it viable?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I would argue that many LPs that are pivoting towards value, it's not an intentional pivot. So what I mean by that
is
it's incredibly difficult to grow high quality, clean product. And what I mean by clean is product that hasn't been irradiated. And we haven't irradiated our product in, gosh, I think the last time was late 2018 or early 2019. So it's very, very difficult to be able to do that consistently. You look at other LPs, there's a very material price difference between a premium versus a value type product. I think that many LPs within the space would like to be able to command sort of the price premium, perhaps that we can, but it does make it very difficult because they cannot consistently cultivate and grow that high terpene, high THC, you know, the product that smells great and that is incredibly endorsed by bud tenders. It's very, very difficult to do so. So, you know, it's a very cash constrained type environment right now as well. So what I think we're finding is that quite a number of LPs are taking some pretty fundamental price reductions, forcing themselves to play within the value chain in order to try to generate some of that cash back.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this may not be a question for you. I'm not sure. So you can pass on it, but I just saw someone on the YouTube chat ask, what do you use instead of irradiation to mitigate microbes? Do you know it all? I don't know. Yeah. And what's irradiation? Like, what is that about?
I actually don't.
Ornesca is all about that. So
yeah. What I mean by irradiation is that when you irradiate product, I mean, you basically shoot it with gamma rays. So that takes care of the mold and any of the yeast and it, you know, it kills off, any of that sort of effect on the product, but you're still left with it. You're just left with dead yeast or dead mold. And quite frankly, that is what makes the product smell and taste awful. Because of the way we grow and because, I mean, we have incredibly strict cleaning protocols. We have incredibly strict growing protocols. We have really strong SOPs. We haven't needed to kill off the yeast and the mold and whatnot because quite frankly, we haven't had it. And this all sort of falls within Health Canada standards as to the levels of each that you can have. And really that's why our product smells and tastes and you have a different effect from it. It's because we don't have those gamma rays and you quite frankly don't have dead yeast and dead mold on the bud.
That sounds very, very appetizing to say the least, and not having that on the cannabis. Fantastic. So, I see that you guys have a new relationship with, who is it? Scott's Miracle-Gro. That's no small name in the business.
No small. Can
you talk a little bit about that? We have a couple more minutes left here.
Sure, absolutely. So Scott's Miracle-Gro actually have a subdivision that is called Hawthorne. And they are heavily focused on cannabis research. And sort of given the Canadian versus the US market, that research primarily is going to be conducted in Canada. You know, they did have the option, I'm sure, to speak to other LPs, but quite frankly, given the way we grow, given sort of our position within the segment, given our very specific indoor purpose-built facility, they chose to partner with us. So we have built a cannabis R&D facility right next actually to our cultivation facility in Kelowna.
Great.
I can't say too much right now, but we are incredibly excited to be able to announce something in the near future.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to that being on this show on the day that it happens. Right, Javi?
You can count on it.
Awesome. Irina, real quick, you know, just chat a little bit about how you all pivoted within COVID. Obviously, it is the name of the game until this whole thing ends. And then we're going to be talking about how people are pivoting out of it. Yeah. Right. So, you know, maybe we chat a little bit about where you all are headed as well.
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. COVID absolutely has been unprecedented for many organizations and many industries, and we certainly haven't been insulated from it. You know, outside of the very normal work from home and all the right safety protocols, I would say that flower was, especially at the beginning, was disproportionately affected by COVID because we traditionally have done much better in brick and mortar shops than we have online, and that's just because we're a premium product with a premium.
Yeah, the kind of you have to see and smell the bud to want it to be the premium.
And that's it.
Until you know it is premium. Well,
exactly. So I would say we were disproportionately affected by it, but very thankfully, you know, Ontario, which is where we do about 50% of our business, did open up again in June, and effective, I think, the middle of August, we were the number one strain across all sizes and form factors in English Canada. So. Suffice to say that we got over that hump very well. But from a cultivation perspective, and I think this really speaks just to the people we have internally, just to how passionate they are about it. When we were right at the beginning of COVID, we bought cots, we bought, you know, food, we bought supplies, and we had people, at least I think 25 people willing to literally live in the facility, wow. Be away from their families. I mean, it was incredible just to see how this organization pulled together. And I think that really does just speak to how passionate the people that we have are about this product and this company.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That is something I have not heard before. I'm glad we asked that question. Honestly, I get tired of asking that question because we all want to stop talking about COVID, right? Sure. The pandemic is something that we all just want to forget for a day is happening, but it's very real. It's very real for businesses like you all. And it's very cool to hear that you all have took an approach like that. So more power to you. And hopefully that means good things to come.
More power. I mean, truly, I can't say this enough, more power to the people willing to do it because that's an incredible sacrifice to make for a company. But again, it just speaks volumes to the passion that we have internally.
Amen. Amen. Irina, thank you so much for being here with us. This has been very educational and very, very great to have you. Tell Terry and Vinay hello for us. Where can our audience find you?
Myself personally or flower?
Not flower, unless you want to give your personal info, but flower, flower for sure.
So you can find us. We are www.flower.ca. Please find us at the OCS, at the AGLC, and in BC, and soon to
perfect. Perfect. Awesome. Thanks so much, Irina. Stay healthy, and we will definitely catch up with you again soon.
Thanks so much, guys. Take care.
Bye. Thank you.
Awesome. I don't know if you've noticed, I'm getting attacked by a fly. And it is driving me up a wall. I apologize if you all see me swatting at air if you can't see the fly. I'm not crazy. There is a fly. It is coming for me. All right.
To Irina. So just because we're a finance, focused media outlet, Scotts Miracle-Gro, stock ticker SMG, reported earnings last week, stellar earnings. You know, they were, you know, revenue spiked almost 80% to $890 million. And its Hawthorne division, the one that focuses on cannabis, saw sales increase by 68% to $351 million. So, you know, Irina was talking about the growth of Hawthorne and the importance in the industry. Here you go.
Amen.
Check out all of the results on benzinga.com/cannabis/earnings.
Yeah, check out Flower as well. They are a really, really cool company. And you will be seeing a lot more of them, I think, as within Benzinga events, Benzinga news. I think they're going to be quite a presence moving forward. So make sure you take a look at them. Awesome. So speaking of clean cannabis, I thought that was so cool. She brought that up because we have a very cool guest from Willow Industries. Who is it? It's Jill Ellsworth, I believe.
Indeed. Oh, she co-founded the company. She is the CEO. And, you know, she's joining us right now. And
absolutely.
I'd assume.
Jill, let's make sure we get your video and microphone on. If you can hear us, let us know. But just incredibly. Oh, there she is. How are you, Jill?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're great. We're great. Fresh, I'm getting attacked by a fly, but you know,
yeah,
other than
that, well, that's annoying.
Yeah, I know, right? Thank you. Jill, let's hop right into it. You know, you have a really cool company, one that, you know, I'm not sure we've talked to anyone like you on this show before. So we'd love to hear what you do.
Yeah, of course. Well, I do want to say, I love that Irina mentioned it's really hard to grow clean. Let yes. me tell you, it's really hard to grow clean weed. So I am the founder and CEO of Willow. About 5 years, I started this company and I developed the technology for decontaminating cannabis. So essentially cleaning weed. Weed is dirty and we make it clean.
Now, I'm assuming the dead yeast, the dead mold, all that is a part of it. Can you dive in a little bit more into your technology? You know, it's, you know, what exactly does it do?
Yeah, of course. So we use ozone gas. Ozone gas has historically been used in the agricultural industry, the food industry, the medical industry, and we found that it really was the perfect fit for cannabis. What it does is it oxidizes the microbials and pathogens on the flower. So, you know, unlike gamma, which renders it dead, but it actually doesn't get rid of it. So you do have dead spores on the flower.
Yeah.
What ozone does is it actually lyses the cell wall. So it's going to break down that entire cell wall, that entire structure of the pathogen. And so there isn't anything remaining that could be dangerous for a consumer. So we've built these rather large chambers and we actually just came out with a new system, but the chambers diffuse ozone gas on finished flower. So flower that's been fully harvested, cured, dried, trimmed, and it goes through the system exposed to ozone. That gets rid of the microbials, and then you have clean flower at the end.
Is this technology newer to cannabis, or is it something that, now obviously the ozone gas, I understand, you know, is utilized in these other industries, but this specific technology that you've developed, is it specific to the cannabis plant?
It certainly is. I developed it specifically for cannabis. And that's where we started all the R&D. And we really were the first company in the industry looking at contamination. I come from the food industry, I'm a dietitian. And so I really understand, you know, the safety aspects of when you guys eat food and drink drinks. And so I really wanted to parlay that knowledge and that technology into cannabis. So when we started 5 years ago, no one was talking about this. But now, yep. like a much, you know, more robust conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at first, when you, you know, don't have like, you know, expanded access to cannabis, you kind of take what you can get. You can't really discern. And maybe because the scale is not so large, a lot of these contamination issues are not as prevalent, right? Or you know, so where do these like issues stem from? Like what causes, you know, the cannabis to be contaminated or not clean in general, right?
Well, I think, you know, we look at a few different culprits. One, these legacy warehouses. I mean, you know, you see whole cultivations being spun up in facilities that used to be making transmissions, or they used to make grain, or like, you know, something that you wouldn't even think about growing a plant in. So you have a lot of historical contamination issues. Human contamination is a big deal. I mean, until COVID started, people were like shocked that you should wear gloves and maybe a hairnet and maybe like a full suit. So we've really tried to teach our customers like, hey guys, like suit up. This is essentially a food product. You want to treat it as such. But then also just the way the plant's grown. It's a bioaccumulator. So you're gonna see more potential contamination. I mean, you get mold on your strawberries the same way as you get mold on a cannabis plant.
Mm-hmm. This question's a little bit out of the box here, Jill, but in terms of how your technology, say in like the food industry, would help make things compliant for the FDA, is this helping prepare it for when the FDA gets involved in the cannabis industry? Is that something that, you know, that you expect similar standards? And obviously, like, you know, I prefer not to have dead yeast and mold on my cannabis. So I'm assuming that this is a step toward that.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say first and foremost, I mean, every state has very specific testing regulations. So cultivators are having to abide by really low microbial thresholds that they have to get past for compliance testing. So, you know, helping the cultivators find have a solution to get through testing right now, but also, yes, of course, setting the stage for what it looks like when the FDA does come in. Because let me tell you, it's going to be no joke. And so we're really trying to educate our partners and let them know, like, you guys are doing the right thing, because it's going to be a lot harder when the FDA comes in.
Absolutely. I'm jumping ahead of federal legalization here, but I feel like it's something that we should talk about when it comes to clean cannabis.
So important.
Absolutely. So now, where do you have a presence? Are you specifically, you know, working with US companies? I'm assuming you can work cross-border, you know, being the ancillary company that you are.
Yeah, so we were nationwide. Our home base is Denver. But we lease all of our equipment across the country. So we're in 22 states right now. We also have a facility in Oakland, California, that allows us to bring in product, clean it in on site, and then send it back to the distributor. So that's our Willow Pure Processing Center. In Oklahoma, we have an on-demand service. So we go to your facility, we clean your flower, and then charge you by the pound. And then we have that same service in Denver. But yes, we have a Canadian partner. But like Irina was saying, their levels are, you know, really, really low. And everyone's used to irradiation. And so, you know, ozone is a much more gentle treatment. And so it's hard to compete with irradiation that essentially renders it sterile.
Interesting. So what's next for your company? I mean, are you, is this going to be, I think, the centerpiece going forward of Willow, or are we going to start seeing more of these types of technologies to help companies be more compliant?
Well, we just released a new system. We took 4 years of cultivator feedback and released a Willow Pure 360, which is the premier system of decontamination. It's a drum model instead of, you know, a chamber and trays. You have better treatment times and higher microbial kill. And, you know, we're really going to continue to double down on improving our technology in our current systems. You know, down the road, we'd like to include other industries, but we're definitely going to stay true to what we do and what we do well, and that's decontamination.
Sorry, Javi, again, if you have a question, cut me off. I'm just incredibly interested right now.
Please.
I want to, with hemp, is this something that you all do in that side of things as well? Because you said 22 states, and I was expecting all 50, you know, with the kind of importance I would expect of what you all bring to the industry.
Of course, someday 50 for sure. Well, with hemp, it's a little gray, right? There isn't the strict testing regulations required for hemp as there are for cannabis. So we're starting to see some states require testing for smokable hemp, but as a company, we do really need to scale our systems because of such the incredible volume of biomass. The way that we treat cannabis now is on a smaller scale. I mean, one of our systems can get through 100 pounds a day, but that's kind of like small volume with like what we're looking at hemp. So it's really important to treat hemp. We just as a company need to scale up.
Which is coming, I'm sure.
Coming, so, definitely.
I'm curious, one of the things you mentioned is like you are in 22 states and people can rent your equipment. How does that work? Like, how big is the machine, and like how long do you need it? Right? Like, how does that work? I'm really curious.
Yeah. So we have a few different programs. So you can do a long-term lease. You can lease the machine for a year to 3 years. The machine size, it depends on which one you get. Typically, they roll through a standard door. They're about 6 feet tall, 6 feet long, 2 feet wide. So it kind of looks like a big cabinet. Our Willow Pure 360 has a smaller footprint. So, you know, a lot of our customers are really appreciate that. And then we do short-term rentals. So say you have a batch of flower that failed, you have like 100 pounds, but this is a one-off thing. You can rent our system for a week or a couple days and to clean the product that failed, and make sure that you pass compliance testing.
So you touch on retesting. What are the implications for companies that have to retest, right?
Gosh, it varies state by state. And this is what is so challenging. The states have continued to work in these silos. They don't, they haven't made the regulations consistent. So in Colorado, if you fail a test, you simply have to, you can treat it, you can decontaminate it, and then send it back for retesting. In California, you have to get approval by the California Department of Public Health. In Illinois, you also have to get approval. So it really varies state by state on whether or not you're allowed to retest and use a type of decontamination method. But we very much stay ahead of that. So we get approval in all the states that we operate from either, you know, the Cannabis Compliance Board or the Department of Public Health. We want them to know we're essentially, you know, bridging the gap between the cultivator and health and safety.
What's the trend with the new states coming online? Do you think will be the trend? I assume it's very early. The election was last week.
Yeah.
So is there a new trend coming there? Sorry.
No. I think it will be interesting. I really feel like the new states coming on are going to look at the states that have had success in testing. And honestly, those states that have had success have really strict thresholds. And so, I feel like we're going to see really challenging testing regulations come down the pipeline because, I mean, we're still learning how cannabis, you know, affects us, you know, if it's smoked, when it's contaminated, what that looks like. So no one wants to take the risk. So they're just going to make it really challenging.
For sure. I have a unrelated question, you know, when it comes to cleaning cannabis. You started this business. And, you know, we can discuss whether the cannabis industry is as female friendly as it likes to claim it is, or as progressive as it likes to claim it is. But you started a business in a sector that seems very manly, right? Like you sell equipment, right? Like metal and big things. Like, how receptive was the industry to you? Like, what kind of challenges did you face? And like when you rolled in with your, you know, like these big machines to make a sale, I mean, I don't know if you did, but like, you know, at a certain point, I assume you had to. Like, yeah. what was the response and the challenges and maybe some of the things that you can tell other women in the industry seeking to get into things that are not so, you know, girly, like, you know, people will go like, oh, you can go and do trimming. It's like, I can do whatever I want, right? So a very comprehensive question.
I mean, it's a great question. Starting this 5 years ago, when it was, I really feel like very male dominated, it was definitely challenging for me. I think, you know, my one leg up is like, they hadn't typically heard from women selling equipment. So they answered the phone. They at least gave me a shot, like right off the bat. I did roll around this like massive machine myself. Also when I was 8 months pregnant in Grows.
Oh my gosh.
I was very out of place. Man, you got to grind, right? That's an entrepreneur.
You got to drag your husband along or, you know,
like. Something like that. So it was definitely challenging. No females were like really selling equipment. But I was finding a solution for something that was becoming very problematic. And that was trying to pass testing. Like Colorado had just implemented these very strict testing regs. And they were seeing me as like, oh, wait, this is a great solution. So it was hard. And also no one really cared in the beginning. They're like, this doesn't make sense. I'm not interested. The conversations changed a lot, but it was really hard in the beginning.
I'm incredibly, sorry, go ahead, Ab.
Yeah, just one piece of advice for, you know, women getting into the industry now and not just generally, you know, specifically in sectors that seem particularly macho-like, you know.
I mean, you really need to know your stuff. You need to continue to persevere. I mean, perseverance is like the backbone of what I've done. But I really knew what I was talking about. I was really passionate about that. That came across. And in continuing to like foster good relationships, that was like a big part of the beginning launch of Willow.
Incredible advice to both men and women getting into this space. Absolutely, Jill. So you know, I just have one last question about, you know, being a dietitian. You know, were you, was cannabis a passion of yours back then? Were you utilizing it in any way? Were you, you know, telling your, like, your clients to utilize? I'm just curious, like, how that eventually led into Willow Industries.
I mean, I've always, you know, been a casual user, and I am an entrepreneur at heart, and I love to find solutions, and I've built two other businesses outside of Willow. And so I saw a huge hole in the industry, and that was consumer safety. And because of that background I had as a dietitian, and I owned a cold pressed juice company, I really understood consumer safety. And so literally one day I was looking at my next move, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to find a way to clean weed. And it was as simple as that. But I really knew nothing about the industry, nothing about commercial growing. So it was a huge learning curve. But, you know, as a true entrepreneur, you're like, I'm going to find a way.
Well, and here you are teaching us about the science and the litigation behind it. So,
right. And did find a way, by the way. Like, the first time I got pitched Willow, I was like, this is boring. Like, why would I care? And you did a great job, right? Now, like, and you have been doing a great job for the past few years, by the way, you know, telling this story in an enticing manner so that people understand what's going on. And I had a similar situation last week with someone, speaking with someone who makes rolling papers, and he was telling me about the permeability. And I was like, dude, you know, this makes Dunder Mifflin look boring. So same here, it's like, wow, like, this is actually interesting.
Well, you know, Jill, like, maybe you can back me up on this. You know, we have been pushing since early October, I think, in multiple facets about how science is really starting to really take another threshold within the cannabis industry, and how it's becoming more and more important to the investor community, or it should be, in regards to, you know, the science behind the plant. And this is one more aspect of what I think, you know, just solidifies that idea.
Absolutely. I mean, we're learning so much about how the plant reacts when it's contaminated and what happens afterwards. I mean, there's still so much to learn, but I mean, I really think we've done a good job kind of paving this path. And I'm excited to see what will, you know, what the industry will do, and how we can continue to, like, grow and innovate within our sector.
Fantastic. Jill, I think we're gonna have to come to a close here, but where can our audience find your technology, get a hold of you if they're entrepreneurs and interested in meeting you?
Yeah, of course. So our website, willowindustries.com, very comprehensive, lots of info there. You can send us a form, and we'll definitely get back to you. I mean, feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn. And I'm happy to, you know, talk to anyone about being an entrepreneur and starting in a new industry that you really know nothing about. But, you know, mostly I am so thankful you guys had me on. I love you guys. You have always been really supportive of Willow. So thank you.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We will continue to be. And I think, Javier, more credit goes to you. But Jill, you'll definitely be hearing from us a lot more. Because just incredibly impressive business you put together over there.
Thank you.
But thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Take care.
Have a good one.
Hey, you too.
Fantastic. Javier, that was an incredible guest that you brought us. Jill, incredibly impressive. Three businesses, dietitian, owned her own juicing company, I think she said. Oh. And then to top it off, Willow Industries, which uses ozone gas to clean cannabis. Just what a progress there.
What a product too, right? Like, imagine if someone told you 10 years ago, people will be using ozone to clean weed. And you would go like, what are you talking about? Weed, like ozone is up there. Like
that's when I first read the prompt for this portion, I had to reread it about four times.
There's a company that sent some tissue culture, like some cannabis cells or mm-hmm. hemp cells actually up, you know, to space in a SpaceX mission to see how it reacted. Interesting.
Okay. We'll have to get into that more. Now is not the time. Please, Javier, would you please let us know who we are talking to next?
We have a great friend of mine who is, as I am, from Argentina, Lucas Nocilia. He is the president of Avicana Latam, and he's in the C-suite in Avicana Incorporated, which is a Canada-based company focused in biotechnology and you know, research in cannabinoids. They work with J Labs at Toronto, and they have a bunch of collaborations with different universities and research institutions. But today, Lucas, being from Argentina and having set up a very successful grow in Colombia, will be discussing with us what happened today in Argentina, where the government actually came out with regulations for the self-cultivation, solidarity cultivation, which is something similar to caregivers in the US, and sale in pharmacies and some other entities of medical cannabis and derivative products. So Lucas, thank you for joining us.
How are you guys? Thanks for having me here. It's my pleasure to.
We're glad to have you. Glad to have you. As Javi has instructed me, pura vida. I hope I said that somewhat close, but I'm trying to find a little bit more joy in life, right? So it seems like a good way to go about it. But how are things? Where are you located?
I'm located in Santa Marta, Colombia. That's the north part of Colombia in the Caribbean. I've been here since 2017, setting up our infrastructure here, basically on our breeding plan, cultivation and extraction capabilities, while also leading the strategy of Avicana in Latin America, which is basically part of what we're going to go through now, being Argentina, one of the most important countries here. This step the government is taking is key and further validates what's been happening in Latin America in the last month, right?
Yeah, for sure. So before we get into Argentina, do you have a view? I know Santa Marta is beautiful. Is it? It's like, can we see your view right now? Or
sure, guys. Yes.
Way to put him on the spot, Avi.
I'll do it for you guys, of course.
Yeah, please do it.
And for anybody who is listening on Spotify after the fact, this is where you go to bzcannabishour.com and tune into that video. Yep. And see.
Are you guys ready?
Yes. Yeah. Oh my Lord. You will want to go to the website to see that. That's beautiful. If you need anybody to clean your place, I will do so. is fantastic.
One more thing before you jump in, and we were talking with Flower Corp earlier about outdoor grows and how many plants do you have growing outdoors?
Well, at this point we're probably around 50,000, which is, yeah, I would say 80% of that is outdoor. We're in one of the best places on earth to grow cannabis outdoor. You know, Santa Marta was a hub for cannabis back in the 70s. That's because where we are located, you know, cannabis works on a microclimate sort of basis. So here we're in a place with low relative humidity. It's called the dry Caribbean, and basically combines the benefits of a tropical location while also having low relative humidity, which is key, especially at flowering stage. So we know we are where cannabis is gonna get bigger and bigger. And yeah, we've been pioneers on this new paradigm on growing cannabis in locations such as Colombia, which reinforces these advantages on the microclimate, on the regulations and the pretty solid framework that we have to work for medicinal cannabis, right? Mm-hmm.
And you know, now, yeah, going to Argentina, the new regulations, what kind of commercial opportunities does it create? I celebrate, that home growing is allowed. I celebrate, the caregiver model. But are there any stipulations as to, what commercial growing will look like and what kind of industry can be developed in the country?
Well, first of all, home grow is, I think it's... The NGOs and the mothers organizations that really deserve that. So that makes me really, really happy. I want to say that because I know what they've been through, especially in the last years, pushing this regulation forward. But when it comes to the industry opportunities, basically Colombia has been building capabilities on producing qualified API, very traceable because we went through a genetic characterization process, extra characterization process. So basically at this point, when we are at commercial stage already, all these countries opening their medicinal approaches on cannabis will allow us to export them, final products, API, bulk formulations for products. So I really think there's an opportunity for Latin America to be self-sufficient and work combining the efforts made from the early movers such as Colombia or Uruguay with the newcomers such as Argentina, Peru, Ecuador, Brazil. So basically there's plenty of opportunities for us. I'm very happy about that. And that might bring me back to Argentina at a certain point, which is nice too.
Now, you clarify maybe something culturally for me. I've spoken to a few Latin American companies and they seem, you know, maybe it's particular regions where this happens, but, you know, cannabis still isn't really well thought of all the way through in terms of just being the average Joe, the average person. Is that something that you all run into, is really the education of the regions that you work in that you all really have to put emphasis on?
Well, especially given that the approach is medicinal, and basically what it's being regulated in Latin America are compound pharmacy models and models where basically you need a prescription to get your cannabis medicine. The main challenge is education, you know, patients and doctors and prescribers. So that's basically when it comes to commercializing our products, it's not as easy as just promoting them or doing marketing activities, but education, evidence, you know. Everything has to be based on that. And that's basically one of our main focus now that we went through the vertical integration and now we're at a commercial stage. And that's the logic that countries such as Argentina are following, where the approach is R&D, promoting education. Same thing in Peru. Same thing is going to happen in Ecuador. Brazil is setting a very strict standard on only products GMP certified where stabilities would be allowed to get imported. So I think you hit it there, because at the end of the day, the biggest challenge the region faces now is education, right? And evidence on our products, you know, and safety and efficacy and all of that.
So in fact, all the laws in Latin America, except for Uruguay, forbid access to flower, right? That's what you meant when you said like compounded medications, you know, is it like master formulations and stuff like that? Can you, you know, explain that a little bit better, right? If I'm in Argentina, if I'm in Colombia, if I'm in Peru, can I go get some bud or what is it that we can get?
No, that's only available in Uruguay, because as you know, Mujica changed the paradigm long time ago, and they allow directly Uruguayans to buy their flowers at pharmacies. But when it comes to the compound pharmacy, as we are understanding it in Colombia and countries such as Argentina, it's the old way through pharmacies, where you go with a prescription and they create a product for you at a more artisanal way. You know, you cannot industrialize the production. You cannot do big batches, and that's because they really want to wait until you have enough evidence on your compounding pharmacy models. And once that happens, which is going to happen in the next months, let's say 1 year from now, then you can register your product, because they will consider it's enough evidence for that. But the system will work in a way where you're going to have a prescription from your doctor, you're going to go to the pharmacy and they're going to do the formulation for you right there, you know. So it's kind of limiting in certain way. And we're trying to promote and to talk with the government to make that more efficient. But that's the decision many governments are taking, which is a little bit, it's a conservative approach on things, but it ensures that you work on creating the evidence for those products to then evolve into registered products that are able to be produced at an industrial scale, right?
So, you know, from a different perspective here, you know, looking at the Argentinian market, is this something that you're going to see other companies jump into? You know, like we're seeing companies jump into Portugal, and, you know, we kind of saw the Colombian craze a little bit. Do we see that with Argentina?
Definitely. There's this approach in Argentina where they all want to grow cannabis, you know, and at the end of the day, that's not the way to go, because setting up a cultivation and extraction process takes, from my understanding, at least 2 years, where you're going to try your genetics, try your processes and get validations from the government, all of which is CapEx heavy and OpEx heavy. And at this point, we've developed those capabilities. So we know in countries such as Argentina, you'll see more the labs and the services basically getting into the space first. That's what I would do. Although there are some companies getting into cultivation, that's more like a long-term sort of bet from their side. So I definitely think that a lot of companies will get into countries such as Argentina, but more for commercial, for medical, for R&D, basically trying to work with the universities and the hospitals, and there's going to be a huge opportunity, but mainly on that, which I think Argentina has a lot of capabilities, right? There's also a very significant cannabis culture in cities such as Buenos Aires. So that's something that will, with the homegrown, as we were talking, will become very big too. So everything is gonna become bigger and bigger. And companies, for example, in Colombia that are active in the Latin American region will definitely be in Argentina, but mostly on the commercialization and medical education for products, final products, bulk formulations, API, and those sort of products, you know, just basically finding local partners that can add value to what we are doing now on distribution mainly.
You mentioned research, and I know you have very good research relationships with institutions in Canada and in Colombia, but from what I know, you also have a very good research relationship with an Argentine university, University of Buenos Aires. I remember covering when you sent over some, you know, CBD isolate, and like, can you tell us a little bit about that relationship?
Sure. Like back in time, of course, my first attempt on cannabis was in Argentina, when I saw that law wasn't getting regulated and everything happened so fast. We ended up here in Colombia, where we considered was the best place to grow cannabis, given what I mentioned before. I also understood that through that law, we were able to do R&D. That was clear in the regulation. That was a vision. So I connected with University of Buenos Aires, Universidad de Buenos Aires, which I was familiar with because I had my degree there. And basically we started this project where, since they were facing too many limitations from budget to, you know, getting the permits, I was, okay, let's exchange knowledge, you know. And I invited one of their PhDs to come to Santa Marta. He came 2 times. He was part of our breeding plan and some experiments on the ground, where we take a lot of pride of our R&D program here on genetics, and he was very helpful. He also learned about the early stages of the industry. We shipped them CBD. So basically we created this relationship in order to give to the academy the possibility to learn about cannabis before the industry was gonna be built, you know, which I think was one of the things that didn't happen in Colombia. Here, like the industry and companies such as Avicana, were in a way teaching the government on what was cannabis. These guys were coming to our facility to audit us, and it was the first time they were seeing a cannabis plant live, you know? So the idea was trying to give the university the ability to set a standard in Argentina by learning from on the ground, like the details of the whole process, the industry and the challenges the industry was facing. So that was great, and I'm happy that at this point I made like one of the maybe most experienced PhDs in Argentina who's part of the university to know more about cannabis and transfer all that knowledge into making the right decisions for the academy in Argentina, right?
Fantastic. That's really interesting info. So, you know, I guess coming back to our audience here, you know, looking, if investors are looking at Latin America, what is mm-hmm. something that behooves them? You know, what should they really be looking for in a business, you know, looking to get started in Argentina?
Well, I think given that we've done all the effort, I think they should be looking at companies with final products already, you know, that have been doing all the homework for the last 5, 4, 3 years, you know, mostly the last 3 years for us here on the ground, but Avicana effort has been carrying for the last 4 or 5 years. And try to work with companies such as Avicana, you know, who we already have the formulations, the products, the API. So whatever your plan is, if you want to formulate your own products, you can get access to API. If you want to work through our raw phyto line of final products, we're open to distribute that product in countries such as Argentina and other countries in the region. So I think investors should be looking for companies already established, which if you contextualize this with the whole industry, we're still like not as big as other companies, you know. And when it comes to smaller investors, like, you can always think about the opportunities to provide services to the industry. And I think there's a huge entrepreneurial opportunity. There's a huge entrepreneurial culture in countries such as Argentina. So I think there's going to be plenty of opportunities for those entrepreneurs to detect where, like, it can be, you know, an analysis lab. It can be, you know, different things depending on how the regulation, because now the regulation has to go into the details from the different regulations from the different entities in the government. But I think I would be looking for established companies if you're a sophisticated institutional investor, and if you wanna see more like the opportunities, it's a good opportunity to do startups and bring entrepreneurs to the industry, because this is gonna be huge and it can only increase, right? It's just getting started. Like, the belief was cannabis is green gold in Latin America because it sounds like that, right? But at the end of the day, when you see the regulations and the actual potential demand that you can have based on the current regulations, things are just getting started. You know, they're just getting started in Colombia. You can picture in the rest of the countries. And so,
$700 million into the Colombian experiment. We're only kicking off. So that's a little tidbit right there.
Yeah,
you know,
it'll take
a little bit. You know, just be patient. You know, wait out and make long term investments. That's what it's all about. If you think a year ahead, if your finance, you know, if you have, you know, cash to operate just 1 year, you'll be in deep trouble because these things take a lot more time than we expect them to, right?
Yeah, it's a lot about, Javier, setting expectations the right way. I think that this industry was built on high expectations back in time. We learned the lesson. And now it's a question of explaining and educating the investment community too, you know, about like the opportunity is huge, the potential demand is huge too, but we need some time in order for that demand to consolidate. And it's happening as we speak, you know, Argentina, Peru, Ecuador, all these countries are issuing the regulations, have been issuing the regulations for the last year, not 5 years ago. So you gotta give that some time. And I think maybe in 1 year from now, we're gonna see things maturing a little bit more and demand happening and things moving. And that's where the opportunities are gonna get crystallized a little bit more, maybe.
Well, I look forward to catching up on that a little bit down the road then, Lucas, because this has been incredibly educational for me, and I'm sure for our audience as well. And Javier, I know you have a massive knowledge on this as well, but thank you. Thank you, Lucas. I really appreciate you being on with us. I know this is short notice. Or Luca, I apologize if I'm saying that incorrectly.
Lucas,
okay.
In Italy, it would be Luca, but in Argentina, Lucas is more common.
Gotcha, Lucas. Okay, so Lucas, where can our audience go to find you? Is it avicana.com?
Yes, we were on social media, LinkedIn, and yeah, happy to follow our story from now on.
Perfect. Awesome. Thank you so much for being with us, Lucas. We'll have you on again shortly. Really, really interesting, but thanks again, my friend.
My pleasure, Leo. Thank you guys very much for having me here.
Thank you. Awesome. Javi, what a show today, man. We had three incredible guests. I learned a bevy amount of information today. Really, really, really fun.
It was. And by the way, if you're interested in the Avicana story, go to Benzinga as well. We've published, you know, we followed their story from day one. We visited their grow operations in Colombia. We visited their offices in Toronto. And you know, we got like every other exclusive that they came out with. So make
sure. A leader in the Latin American market is an understatement.
So make sure to check out Avicanna, Willow Industries, and Flower Corporation. Flower without an E. So yes. F-L-O-W-R. We've covered them all very extensively on Benzinga, as we have covered every other company in the industry.
And we'll continue to. For sure. And they'll also, I'm sure, will all be present at our events. Avicanna will be at our small cap event on December 8th and 9th. Flower will be joining us again next year. They had a presentation on October 15th. Catch that video on bzcannabis.com. Tons of places you can see these types of opportunities. BZ Cannabis Hour is just one of them. Thank you all so much for joining us. Please come back next week for another fun show. Javier, always a pleasure, my friend. Until next time.
Until next time. Tune in next Thursday, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, for another Benzinga Cannabis Hour.
Thanks, everybody.
Realtors abide by a code of ethics. This is Article 9 in action. Beth, a first-time homebuyer, knew nothing about the home buying process, except that she wanted to buy a home. But her Realtor had the expertise to make sure Beth understood every document, even giving her copies to review with her lawyer so Beth could close on her first home with confidence. Complicated things explained in simple terms. The difference between an agent and a Realtor is real. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors. That's who we are.
Karen is the proven expert in addiction treatment. A recent independent study showed that 94% of Karen patients were still in recovery 90 days post-treatment. Visit caron.org/real. Karen. Real results. Real care. Real about recovery.